The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Heart Letter and the Harvard Health Letter. And the first article is from the Harvard Heart Letter of April 2022, and it's entitled, Stay Active as You Age to Extend Your Health Span. The active grandparent hypothesis explains how humans evolve to be physically active throughout life and why that habit helps ward off heart disease and other chronic ailments. Some people think of the golden years as a time to slow down and take it easy. But our distant and not so distant ancestors who lived past their mid-60s didn't have that option. Hunter-gatherers had to be physically active to avoid starvation, says paleoanthropologist Daniel E. Lieberman, professor of human evolutionary biology at Harvard University. And as our Stone Age ancestors grew older, they kept foraging to provide surplus food for their children and grandchildren. But according to the active grandparent hypothesis, that late-in-life physical activity also helped them live longer, healthier lives. Lieberman and colleagues describe this concept, which provides an evolutionary explanation for the importance of lifelong physical activity, in an article published in 2021 in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Something special happened during the course of human evolution to enable us to live a long time after we stopped reproducing, says Lieberman. Most species, including our closest relatives, the great apes, rarely live much past the age of menopause. The active grandparent hypothesis suggests that humans evolved responses to physical activity that explain not just how long we live, our lifespan, but also how long we remain healthy, our health span. Until the invention of modern medicine, your lifespan was usually about the same as your health span. In the past, once you became very sick, you were likely to die. But with today's therapies, we can keep sick people alive for decades, says Lieberman. Today in the United States, the average lifespan is 77 years, but the average health span is 63. We should stop focusing so much on lifespan and focus more on health span, he adds. Lifelong physical activity can extend your health span through two main pathways, both of which involve how people allocate energy. Our ancestors spent a lot of energy being active, but their survival instincts also compelled them to avoid unnecessary activity. That extra energy instead went to storing fat for times when food was scarce and increasing sex hormone levels to reproduce, Lieberman explains. This deep-rooted instinct to save energy helps explain why feeling motivated to exercise, defined as discretionary physical activity done for the sake of health, can be challenging. But in today's environment, where most of us don't expend any physical effort to meet our basic needs for food and survival, being active is even more crucial. Being inactive channels that unspent energy into fat storage and excess hormone production. We never evolved to cope with that, says Lieberman. Being physically active does more than just burn calories, though. As your lungs, heart, and other muscles start working hard, the resulting physiologic stress temporarily damages tissues and cells. A healthy body responds by turning on repair and maintenance mechanisms that heal the damage. The response also makes the walls of your blood vessels more flexible and elastic, And over time, your heart gets larger and stronger, says Lieberman. On a molecular level, the repair mechanism helps dampen inflammation and discourage blood clot formation, which helps prevent cardiovascular disease. Here is the clincher. We don't turn on those repair and maintenance mechanisms as much if we're not physically active. Why? Because as humans evolved, they were never habitually inactive. There was no way they'd survive just sitting around doing nothing day after day. But those mechanisms are what extends your health span. And that's why we evolve to be active as we age, says Lieberman. Physical activity is both the cause and the effect of a lengthy lifespan. Still, it's perfectly normal to avoid exercise as a voluntary optional activity, he says. People who don't like exercising are simply following their natural instincts to preserve energy. However, we also evolved to be physically active when it was rewarding for reasons other than survival. Sports and dancing are all rewarding because they're fun, communal events that help people to connect with others. In today's world, we can make physical activity necessary in our own lives by making it rewarding. And the best way to do that is to make it a social event, says Lieberman. As for himself, he goes on long runs with his friend, neighbor, and Harvard colleague, Dr. Aaron Bagish, a co-author of the study and director of the Cardiovascular Performance Lab at Massachusetts General Hospital. We text each other in the evening to make a plan. It doesn't always feel like a great idea early in the morning, but because I know Aaron's going to be waiting for me on the corner at 6 a.m., it gets me out of bed. You certainly don't have to run or even jog to reap the health benefits of physical activity. Walking also works, nor do you have to spend a lot of time, as ample evidence suggests that as little as 10 to 20 minutes of physical activity a day can have a major impact on your heart health and longevity. So find a friend to commit to a regular exercise date. It's a great way to succeed with your exercise goals, and it also makes sense from an evolutionary perspective, Lieberman says. You can read more about these ideas in Lieberman's latest book, Exercised: Why Something We Never Evolved to Do is Healthy and Rewarding. Now, the next thing we're going to read from the Harvard Heart Letter is called Ask the Doctor by Dr. Deepak L. Bhatt, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Heart Letter. And again, this is from the April 2022 issue. A question for Dr. Bhatt. My grandfather had a heart attack in his mid-70s, but he survived and lived until age 93. My father also had heart disease, but he died of a cardiac arrest when he was just 67. What's the difference between a heart attack and cardiac arrest? These two terms often confuse people because they're sometimes used interchangeably. But a heart attack and cardiac arrest are not the same thing. A heart attack is a circulation problem that happens when a blocked artery prevents blood flow to part of the heart muscle. If the artery isn't reopened to restore blood flow, the heart cells supplied by that artery start to die. Symptoms include intense discomfort in the center of the chest or other parts of the upper body, as well as breathlessness, sweating, and nausea. But the heart continues to beat, and the person remains awake. In contrast, cardiac arrest is most often an electrical problem that causes the heart to abruptly and unexpectedly stop beating. An electrical misfire causes the heart's lower chambers to flutter or quiver. This is known as ventricular fibrillation, or VFib. During cardiac arrest, a person suddenly collapses or faints, stops breathing normally, and can't be roused. Other symptoms can include irregular, odd, gasping, or choking sounds that are called agonal breathing. That's A-G-O-N-A-L. As well as twitching muscles. Most heart attacks do not trigger cardiac arrest. However, when cardiac arrest does occur, a heart attack is often to blame. Sometimes the oxygen-starved heart muscle triggers V-fib during a heart attack. Scar tissue from a heart attack can also damage the heart, leaving it unable to pump effectively. A weakened heart is more prone to V-fib. Because cardiac arrest is so closely tied to coronary artery disease, the underlying risks are largely the same. These include smoking, diabetes, high cholesterol, physical inactivity, obesity, high blood pressure, and a family history of early heart disease. Other heart conditions that can predispose people to cardiac arrest include weak heart muscle. This is also called cardiomyopathy, as well as heart valve problems and inherited conditions that affect the heart's electrical system, like long QT syndrome. Some drug use increases risk as well, particularly using drugs like cocaine or amphetamines, or overdosing on opioids or other pain medications. Finally, the risk of cardiac arrest rises slightly during and for up to 30 minutes after strenuous exercise, especially in people who are out of shape. But the odds are estimated at 1 in 1.5 million during any one exercise episode, which is far outweighed by the overall heart-protecting benefits of exercise. Now going on with the Harvard Heart Letter in the April 2022 issue, the next article is entitled Smart Snack Strategies. Paying closer attention to your snacking habits can help you to control your weight and blood sugar, which are two key factors for a healthy heart. If you're trying to improve your diet, between meal snacks can either help or hinder your efforts. Several simple strategies can keep you on track, whether you're trying to manage diabetes, ward off heart disease, or lose weight. The most important tip is to upgrade the quality of your snack choices. Many people favor starchy snacks like chips and bread, says Mark O'Meara, a dietitian at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Many of the veggie chips people believe are healthy are just potato chips with vegetable powder added for flavor and color, he notes. You're better off choosing more nutritious carbohydrate-based foods like fruit or whole grain crackers, and to balance them with a little bit of protein or healthy fat. Doing so will release the carbohydrate into your bloodstream slowly over a longer time. That gives your body more time to burn the calories, and you're also more likely to feel full and satisfied until your next meal. When you eat low-quality carbs like candy or potato chips, you're often hungry again within an hour. Then you end up eating even more calories, which are then stored as fat, foiling your attempts to lose weight and control your blood sugar. Snacks can help you get the recommended 4 to 5 servings of fruit and vegetables daily, a goal most Americans don't meet. But don't have a whole apple or banana. Have a half and pair it with a small handful of nuts like unsalted almonds or peanuts. If you need a portable snack, all natural bars made with dried fruit, nuts, and dark chocolate can be a good option. Look for brands made with whole foods, not highly processed products. By curbing hunger between meals, snacks may help prevent overeating during meals. When people get too hungry before dinner, You're often tempted to get quick but high-calorie takeout meals instead of spending the time to cook a healthy homemade meal, says Omira. But sometimes people snack out of habit rather than hunger. Maybe you treat yourself to a cookie every day at 3 p.m. But there are probably days you aren't actually hungry because you had a filling lunch or skipped your workout. Before you grab a snack, ask yourself, am I really hungry or am I just following a routine, says Omira. Many people snack after dinner, but if you eat a well-balanced dinner around 6 or 7 p.m., it takes about 4 hours for your body to digest the food. You shouldn't be hungry again unless you go to bed at 10 or 11 p.m. Mindless snacking while watching television is very common. Try to watch less. Enjoy your favorite show, but once it's over, stop. Don't stay on the couch. Move to another part of the house that's far away from the kitchen. Do another activity, read, or do a hobby, during which you won't be tempted to nosh, Omira says. Another trick he recommends that you can use any time of day is to sip a hot beverage instead of having a snack. A mug of herbal tea or decaf coffee fills you up and blunts your appetite. This practice may even encourage weight loss, according to some research. So, what are some of these healthy snack suggestions? Well, these include a half a cup of plain, low-fat Greek yogurt topped with fresh or frozen berries, a quarter cup of trail mix made with nuts, seeds, dried fruit, and dark chocolate, a quarter cup of hummus with 1 cup of fresh vegetables like baby carrots, broccoli florets, and cherry tomatoes. Peanut, almond, or sunflower butter on sliced apples, pears, bananas, or whole grain crackers. Low-fat cheese cubes, about the size of 3 or 4 dice in total, with an apple or a small bunch of grapes. And finally, a half a cup of shelled edamame, fresh green soybeans, sold shelled or in pods, usually in the freezer section. The next article in the Harvard Heart Letter is entitled, The Changing Landscape of LDL-Lowering Drugs. For most people, statins, and you know that's spelled S-T-A-T-I-N-S, are still the best way to lower harmful LDL cholesterol. But two new drugs may be promising additions or alternatives for those with stubbornly high LDL levels. There are many reasons why statins rank among the most widely prescribed drugs in the United States. First approved in the late 1980s, statins have a long track record for being effective and safe. These drugs don't just lower LDL cholesterol, they also reduce heart attacks and death from heart disease, the nation's leading killer. Most are available in generic versions and cost only about $11 per year per person. Yet some people taking the maximum dose of a statin still have higher than recommended LDL levels, and a small percentage of people report that they just can't tolerate statins. Until recently, the primary alternative for lowering LDL were ezetimibe, which is also called Zetia, and PCSK9 inhibitors, which included alirocumab, or Praluent, and evolocumab, or Repatha. All of these drugs have been shown to lower heart attack risk. In the past 2 years, the FDA has approved two new drugs. The first one is called Nexletol, N-E-X-L-E-T-O-L, and the generic name for that is bempedoic acid. The other drug is Leqvio, L-E-Q-V-I-O, and its generic name is Inclisiran. These two new drugs may be helpful for some people, but we still don't know if they will prevent heart attack or stroke, says Dr. Jorge Pletsky, director of preventive cardiology at Harvard's affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. In most cases, a lower LDL value translates to a lower heart attack risk, but not always, he notes. Results from clinical trials evaluating both drugs are expected in several years. For most people, taking a statin can lower LDL to the recommended target of no more than 100 milligrams per deciliter, or no more than 70 milligrams per deciliter if you have a history of cardiovascular disease or a high risk for it. In other words, those who've had a heart attack or have diabetes. But statins often aren't sufficiently potent for some people, especially those with familial hypercholesterolemia. This inherited condition, which affects about 1 in 250 people, can lead to LDL levels of 190 or higher, Dr. Pletsky says. And then there are some people who say that they have muscle aches or pains when taking statins. This inability to tolerate statins occurs in about 5% of people in clinical trials, but up to 15% of people in the real world. Although studies show these symptoms are often not reproducible or actually due to the statin. For people with statin intolerance, the doctor may prescribe ezetimibe, which lowers LDL by about 20%. And you'll remember the other name for ezetimibe is Zetia. The lower non-statin drugs have even greater LDL lowering effects. Now, the first of these is inclisiran, and you'll remember that inclisiran is also called Leqvio, L-E-Q-V-I-O. Like the current PCSK9 inhibitors, inclisiran slashes LDL levels by about 50%. Both types of drugs target the protein known as PCSK9, which is made in the liver and regulates LDL. The original PCSK9 inhibitor use antibodies to grab onto and block PCSK9 after it's been made. Inclisiran instead interferes with PCSK9's genetic blueprint, preventing the protein from being made in the first place. Another difference, the first two PCSK9 inhibitors must be injected once or twice a month, while inclisiran requires just 2 injections per year. The other new drug is bempedoic acid. And you'll remember that the brand name for this drug is Nexletol, N-E-X-L-E-T-O-L. Like statins, bempedoic acid comes as a pill and works by interfering in the same cholesterol pathway. But unlike a statin, bempedoic acid changes into its active form only in the liver, raising the prospect of fewer muscle-related side effects, although that remains to be determined. Taken alone, bempedoic acid lowers LDL by about 25%. Bempedoic acid is also available in combination with ezetimibe, sold under the trade name Nexlizet, N-E-X-L-I-Z-E-T. Studies suggest this combination can cut LDL by about 40%. For people who think they can't tolerate their statin, doctors usually recommend trying a different statin, often a lower dose. Although PCSK9 inhibitors are a proven alternative, they have a very high cost, which has limited their widespread use. For those already on ezetimibe, Nexlizet, remember that's N-E-X-L-I-Z-E-T, might be a good option because it already includes ezetimibe. It's also more affordable than PCSK9 inhibitors and therefore more likely to be approved by insurers, although finding about the drug's ability to prevent heart attacks are still pending. While Dr. Pletsky is optimistic about inclisiran, he's looking forward to results from the clinical trial of that drug. Remember, inclisiran was the first one we talked about that's called Leqvio, L-E-Q-V-I-O. And just briefly, again from the Harvard Heart Letter of April 2022, beware of possible rise in blood clot risk when binge-watching television. Watching television for 4 or more hours a day is linked to a higher risk of developing dangerous blood clots. The study included more than 131,000 people, all aged 40 and older without venous thromboembolism. Venous thromboembolism includes two serious conditions, pulmonary embolism and deep vein thrombosis. Participants who reported watching television at least 4 hours a day were categorized as prolonged viewers, while those who watched less than 2.5 hours per day were deemed seldom viewers. During the follow-up, which ranged up to 20 years, prolonged television viewers were 1.35 times more likely to develop VTE compared with never or seldom viewers. While the findings don't prove cause and effect, the connection makes sense because sitting for long periods causes blood to pool in the legs, which can raise blood clot risk, according to the authors who published their findings in the January 20th, 2022 issue of the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology. It looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.